fame and money and good looks and all of that success were the key to happiness, we'd have a lot more happy people in Hollywood. And we know we don't. You know, there's so much addiction and depression and suicide. So it's very, very clear that it is not the key to happiness and that other things really are.
He's a best-selling author, award-winning filmmaker, inspirational speaker, certified nutrition coach, plant-powered athlete, and host of the number one holistic health podcast in the world, Nathan Crane.
Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, I want to give you a free gift that I have spent over a decade researching thousands of hours of peer-reviewed studies and interviewing hundreds of world-leading functional medical doctors and cancer conquerors that lays out a blueprint for helping your mind and body become a cancer-fighting fortress for natural cancer prevention and healing. And that's my Amazon number one best-selling book, Becoming Cancer-Free. The physical copy sells for like 10 bucks on Amazon, which, you know, you can go get that if you want, but I'm happy to give you the ebook absolutely free. Just head over to becomingcancerfree.com and you can download that ebook instantly. Again, that's becomingcancerfree.com and it's yours as a gift for me to you for tuning into this podcast. All right, let's get to the show. Welcome back to the podcast. Today I am joined by Marcy Shymoff. Marcy, what's happening? It's been a couple of years since we talked. How you doing?
I'm doing great and I love that I get to talk to you. It's always a blast when I get to talk to you. So I'm sure we're going to have a great conversation.
Well, you're thank you. And I feel the same. You're a wealth of knowledge and wisdom and, you know, from your New York Times bestselling books to, you know, the millions of lives you've helped transform around the world by bringing different perspectives on happiness and fulfillment in life, not to mention success and how to help people really dive into their inner, find their inner happiness, find their inner joy, find more fulfillment and purpose in their life. And that's some of the stuff I want to talk with you about today, right? You were just saying offline, you're like, well, you know, my main thing isn't really health. And I'm like, yeah, but it really is, right? Because mental health, emotional health, like to me, that's number one. Physical health is important. And I far too often think that people actually spend more time, maybe too much time on what they look like rather than how they actually feel. And this is where you see people at the gym who look freaking amazing and you talk to them and they're a wreck. They're a mental wreck, emotional wreck, right? They have a lot of self-pity, a lot of self-doubt, a lot of insecurity. And like, who cares all the muscle and leanness and beauty that you look like on the outside if inside you feel freaking awful, right? And so I know that's your specialty is helping people discover true happiness. So I'm excited for you to share some.
I appreciate that you recognize that it is definitely the inside wellness that matters first, I think. And the outside wellness is great. And the outside look is great, but it's the inside stuff that matters.
Now, tell me a little bit about your personal story, because you went through some pretty tough times, didn't you?
I did. Actually, you know, I write and speak around the world about happiness. So people always assume that I was always happy. You know, they say, weren't you always like this? And my answer is absolutely not. Absolutely not. I was born depressed. I came out of the womb with existential angst. I was an unhappy camper from the get-go. The pictures of me as a little kid, I just have this like this heavy feeling. You know, little kids usually are smiley. I was not smiley. I think now when I look back, it was perhaps some either ancestral trauma that I was carrying around or some, you know, perhaps if you believe in it, maybe past life, PTSD. I don't know. You can't know. But my solution to my depression as a young kid was something called sugar. I became a sugar addict. And as you well know, that's a very temporary high. So I'd feel good for about 15 minutes and then crash. And by the time I was in high school, I was about 35 pounds overweight. So I did what most people do when I was in my early 20s. I wanted to get happy. And what people do when they want to get happy is they set goals for themselves. And I set these goals. I set five of them. And I figured once I reach these five goals, I will then be happy. It's called, I'll be
You
happy.
were an advanced 20-year-old, right? I think a lot of people in their 20s are like, I want to get happy. All right, let's go to the bar, let's go get drunk, let's smoke some weed, let's go have sex, right? I think you're a little bit more advanced than a lot of younger people today, unfortunately.
Well, I was a seeker from the get-go. So I definitely wanted a good life and wanted something more than just the party life. So when I was in my early 20s, I set these five goals, and I'll share them because I think people can relate to them. I wanted to have a successful career helping people. I wanted a wonderful husband or life partner, fabulous friends, a comfortable home, and the equivalent of Halle Berry's body. Now I got four out of the five. I do not have Halle Berry's body, but I do have a body that is very healthy now, for which I am extremely grateful. And I'll tell you, Nathan, I worked so hard to get all my ducks in a row to just make sure that all those things lined up. And when I was 1998, so I was 30 then. For those of you who are doing quick math, I'll do it for you. I'm 66. But when I was 30, I had.
You look amazing for 66, by the way. Seriously, I
Thank
actually didn't
you.
know you were in your 60s. I thought you were literally like early 50s, maybe. So that's a
That's very kind.
testament to what you've been doing is clearly working.
Well, thank you. I certainly feel very young and I feel great. But so I had lined up by then all my ducks in a row and had the career and had the partner and had the friends and had the home. And, it was great. Except, actually, I was 40. I'm sorry. I wasn't 30. I was 40. In 1998,
So
I had a
it took you
turning
like
point moment.
20 it took you 20 years to achieve all those goals, basically.
20 years. That's right. It took me 20 years to get all those ducks in a row so that I could be happy.
You were an
And I
overnight
had,
success after 20 years,
yes,
right?
overnight, a 20-year overnight success. That's right. And I had this experience, Nathan, that was, it was that one of those wake-up calls. I had just finished giving a speech to 8,000 people. And I had just autographed 5,432 books. My client had hired a massage therapist to keep massaging my hand so I could keep on writing.
Oh, wow.
And I remembered after signing that last book, on one hand, I felt like an author rock star. But I went up to my hotel room, which was the penthouse suite that my client had gotten for me. And I walked over to these huge windows overlooking Lake Michigan. I was in Chicago. And I took in that view and I turned around and I collapsed onto the bed and burst into tears. And I burst into tears because I realized that after all of that hard work and all of those things, all that I had done, I still felt that emptiness in my heart. I still felt that emptiness inside of me. And I realized this was the end of that road, that I could no longer fool myself into thinking that just that next thing was going to do it. Because I realized that, yeah, I would have an accomplishment or something would happen, and I would feel good for a week or a month or a couple of months, maybe. But then I would return to that kind of feeling of something's not okay, something's not right. And so that's when I decided that's it. I am going to figure this thing out once and for all. And
Have you heard of PEMF therapy for cancer? Well, this podcast is brought to you by Dr. Pollack, and he wants to share with you the groundbreaking research of pulsed electromagnetic field therapy in the treatment of cancer. Studies show PEMF therapy can help control the cancer process and give safe, non-toxic, and non-invasive symptom management. PEMF therapy may enhance other cancer support and treatments, lower inflammation, and promote tissue healing. Studies show it's possible to improve your general well-being and recuperate from surgery, radiation, and chemo better and more quickly. Embrace a comprehensive approach to cancer treatment with PEMF therapy, a vital tool on your path to prevention, treatment, and recovery. For caring and professional guidance and recommendations from Dr. Pollack, go to drpollack.com/intro to cancer. That's drpawluk.com. / Intro to Cancer. You know, with the cold and flu season here, it's critically important that we enhance and strengthen our immune systems. Yes, would you agree? The problem is, though, that there's so much confusion out there when it comes to what actually works for our bodies and for our health. Well, I'll tell you what I used. I used Maison Beljansky's wellness products. Maison Beljansky's products are backed by science to not only help empower the immune system, but can support detoxification and contribute to our overall health. Coming from Europe, the all-natural Beljansky formulas are now available in the United States and are recommended by top doctors everywhere. A lot of the colleagues I work with, functional medicine practitioners that work with patients with all kinds of diseases, are recommending Maison Beljansky's products to their very own patients. As a special sponsor of this podcast, Maison Beljansky has included a very special discount offer for all of my listeners. You can get 15% off your first order using the promo code Nathan, and you'll always enjoy free shipping when you order four products or more. You can grab your wellness products today at maisonbeljansky.com. That's MAISONBELJANSKI, maisonbeljansky.com, and use code Nathan for 15% off.
I dove deeply into the research on happiness. I interviewed all of the experts out there, and I did my own research. I interviewed 100 unconditionally happy people. I call them my happy 100, and I started doing what they were doing, and it started working. And I started feeling truly, deeply happy inside, and it's grown and grown. I would say back then, if you were giving me a grade, I was a D+ in happiness. And today I am a solid A. Now that doesn't mean I'm not a work in progress, because I am. I am always, always doing the work, but it is solid. And what I know now, I've taught this to hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions, who've read Happy for No Reason, that it's possible for anybody, no matter where you are on the happiness continuum, you can absolutely be happier.
So true. It's so powerful. And I wanted to ask you, though, when you were 40 at that time, and you were speaking to 8,000 people and signing 5,000 books and all that, was that the Chicken Soup for the Soul series? Was that those books?
That was after the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. That was before the next kind of quantum leap, which was The Secret that I was in. But yeah, that was after the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. And I felt very blessed to write all of those books. I wrote the women's books in the series. And so I wrote 7 of them. And yet there came a time after having written 7 of them where I just said, I can't do this anymore. I am so bored. And I quit, and people thought I was crazy. What, you're like part of this, just the best-selling series, it's so hot. And I just said, I cannot cook up another book of Chicken Soup for the Soul. And I followed my heart on that. And thank God I did, because that led me to my next, the happiness work.
Yeah, which, I mean, I just want to reiterate that a little bit, recap what you just said for people listening. You know, you had a healthy body, you were famous, basically, you were, you know, doing work that you, you know, wanted to do at the time, right? And you were, I would say, probably pretty rich at the time, or wealthy, wealthier than 99% of people, I would imagine, right? So it's like money, fame, success, respect, you know, good relationship, good body, everything that everybody strives for every day, that they think, oh, I'm finally going to be happy when I've got this or all of this. And here you are, an example, and not the only example out there, right? This is a very common story that you hear on very successful, wealthy, famous, you know, healthy people, is that there's emptiness inside when you're chasing those material things solely, right?
It's so true. I mean, if fame and money and good looks and all of that success were the key to happiness, we'd have a lot more happy people in Hollywood. And we know we don't. We've got addiction, you know, there's so much addiction and depression and suicide. So it's very, very clear that it is not the key to happiness and that other things really are.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. And there's nothing wrong with those things, and they can definitely bring
No.
some happiness to your life, right? I mean, I definitely know being poor, like literally no money, don't know where my next meal is going to come from, don't have enough gas to literally put in my car to drive to the store. Don't have money, even if I had gas, to drive to the store to buy anything anyway, to the point where it's like I don't have to worry about food or gas or paying the bills anymore. That definitely impacts the quality of your life and your level of happiness. There's no doubt about it. But what I've discovered is that kind of stuff will never lead to true fulfillment, right? And fulfillment, I think, is really what you're talking about when you teach and you write about happiness. It's that true happiness, it's that lasting happiness, it's not that you're, walking around 24/7 giddy and joy and bubbly all the time. It's like you have a sense of peace, equanimity, a sense of fulfillment in your life where you're happy majority of the time, or at least at peace majority of the time, and not this deep yearning emptiness inside that says, that's yearning for something else to make you happy. You've learned to make peace with where you're at. Is that right?
Absolutely right. I call it happy for no reason. What I mean by happiness, happy for no reason, doesn't mean that you're walking around 24/7 with a silly grin on your face. What it does mean is that you have an inner backdrop of peace and well-being that doesn't depend on your circumstances. And the reason that we want that is that's what's lasting. Money comes and goes, people come and go, relationships come and go, health can come and go. And if those go, you still want to have that inner state of peace and well-being. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to feel bad when someone dies. You'll feel grief. That's natural. But you'll still have this backdrop of peace and well-being. I say that there's really four stages of happiness. The first three stages are around, well, there's first of all, the first stage is not happy. We know what that looks like and feels like. Then there's happy for bad reason. And that's when people recognize that they're unhappy and they try to get happiness from something that is not life supporting. So those are the addictions. So happy for bad reason is let me drink, let me have something to eat, let me, shop. It's a temporary fix that actually leads to, more problem. Then there's that third stage we were just talking about, which is happy for good reason. Happy for good reason is I've got a great family. I've got a great job. I've got all of the wonderful things. That's fabulous. It's just not the stable state of happiness because, as we said, it can come and go. It's based on the external. And then there's that fourth state. And the fourth state is fully internal. And that's happy for no reason, that inner state of peace and well-being. And so I am all for happy for good reason. And I believe that can come as a result of being happy on the inside first, because the happy on the outside will never bring you the happy for no reason, but the happy for no reason state actually will bring you greater success. Happier people have been shown they make over more than $1 million more over the course of their lifetime. They have a greater success in work. They have better relationships. There's a lower divorce rate. They are one third less likely to get sick. On average, they live 7 to 9 years longer. So these are the fringe benefits of going for that inner state of happiness.
So that obviously leads to the question, what did you discover from all these experts that you practice that they recommend and you've discovered in your own life and teach to others? How can people become happy for no reason?
Great. Well, I love this question, because this is the real juice. So where the rubber meets the road. First, let me just share with you one piece of scientific research that I think is the most important piece for people to understand to get about why happy for no reason. And that is that the science has actually cracked the happiness code. We know what it takes for people to be happy. I think that should be headline news. Here it is, that happiness is the one thing that people have wanted from time immemorial, and we actually know scientifically how to get it. So what science has found is that we all have what's called a happiness set point. And your happiness set point is like a thermostat setting. No matter what happens, whether it's good or bad, you will tend to hover around your thermostat setting unless you do something consciously to change it. This is why people who win the lottery, and you know, most people think, oh, all I'd have to do is win the lottery and then I'd be happy. Well, you would be happier for a few months. Within a year, you would return to your original happiness set point. And the same is true for people who have tragedies. Generally, within a year, they return to their original happiness set point. So the set point is the key to it all. And here's how it's determined. It's 50% genetic. You're born with it. I was not born with the good happiness genes. It's 10% your circumstances. And I want you to notice that it's only 10% our circumstances. And that is what everybody is so busy trying to fix or change or manipulate or control in order to be happier. And it's only 10% of the pie. The other 40% is our habits of thoughts and behavior. And that's where we have the greatest leverage. And I'm going to take it a step further. And I'm going to go back to that 50% that's genetic. And people, as you well know, Nathan, people in the field of epigenetics, Dr. Bruce Lipton, who wrote The Biology of Belief, they say that we can influence or change our DNA, our genes, by changing our habits. So that means that up to 90% of our happiness set point can be shifted by shifting our habits. And that is the only difference between people who are happy and everybody else. They have different habits. And like, to me, hallelujah. Great. Just teach me the habits of those happy people and you can be happier. And that's, you know, this is why this isn't rocket science. This is actually quite simple. And what I'm going to share with you, I'm going to share with you the main habits. And I'll give you some practical things that people can do because I really love the practical. So Nathan, should I just share some of the main habits?
Yeah, please go ahead.
So I found that there are 21 habits. Now that's a lot of habits for people to kind of remember. So I found that they fell into 7 main categories. So that's easier to remember. And people still don't have an easy time remembering 7 of anything. So I created a metaphor or analogy to remember this. I call it building your inner home for happiness. And as I go through this, I invite everyone to pay attention to where are you the weakest? Because wherever you're the weakest, that's where you want to start. That's your Achilles heel. So Nathan, I'm going to put you on the spot at the end of this and ask you, where are you the weakest? Okay.
Perfect.
So these 7 areas.
Ask my wife and my kids. I'm not weak in any of them. 100% perfect. 100% happy okay. All the time.
So we're going to ask you to imagine that you are one of them and they are answering that question for you. Okay.
Oh no. Uh-oh. That's going to be, that's not going to be good.
All right. Well, I'll tell you where I'm the weakest. So I'll start first. So anyway, a home has 7 main areas. It's got a foundation. It's got 4 corner pillars. It's got a roof and it's got a garden. And here's how this relates to your inner home for happiness. The foundation is taking responsibility for your life and your happiness. It means not showing up as a victim of life, a victim of your circumstances, and instead showing up as a victor or a co-creator of your life. So you know you're a victim when you do one of these 3 things, or all of them: blame, shame, or complain. Blaming others for your unhappiness. I can't be happy. Do you know the person I'm married to or the kids I have or the parents I had? Shaming is blaming yourself. Oh, I can't do it. I'm not good. I can't do this, right? And then so shaming is self-blame. And then complaining, it's complaining about your circumstances. Well, if you lived where I lived, you couldn't be happy. Right? So blaming the outside, the weather's so bad. You know, we live in a world of conflict. So yes, that is true. And you can still be happy. and you can take responsibility for your happiness. So that's the first level, is taking responsibility for your happiness.
Let me ask you a question about those three, the blame, shame, complain, right? Because I think I think every one of us here at some point blames, shames, or complains about something, whether it's happiness or not, right?
Right.
So it's one thing to become aware of it, and that's step one. It's like, okay, I'm aware that I'm doing this and it's probably not helpful. You know, fully accepting it, I would say, is probably step two, right? Like, I need to fully accept that I'm responsible for this and it's definitely not helpful. And then what do you recommend people for step three? They're like, okay, I accept it. I'm aware of it. I know that these things are not helpful and they're actually harmful. What can I do about it? And I think that's what people want to know. Hey, so if you've been following me for any time now, you know that I often talk about Helin 951, the nitrogen fermented organic soy drink. I first learned about it at an integrative cancer event years ago, and I've been taking this myself for a long time. It's so potent and it has a strong flavor, so I add their organic mint powder to it, and it's easy to take any time of day. I usually take it in the mornings. You know, I'm constantly looking into natural health products, and the ones that catch my eye are the ones with years of proven results and the science and research to back them up. I love that Helin 951 checks all of these boxes. Made from a unique 100% organic soybean grown in the high mountains of Mongolia, Helin 951 has some incredible health properties. Just a few of the benefits are more energy, better sleep, detox, longevity, better immune function, and some fantastic anti-cancer compounds. The folks over at Helin have made a page just for our followers to learn more. You can head over to helin951.com/crane. That's helin951.com/crane. They have special discounted packages there for you to get you started. And if you use the promo code CRANE, C-R-A-N-E, at checkout, they will also give you free shipping. So head over and grab this special offer for yourself and use the free shipping promo code CRANE, or just give them a call if that's easier for you. They are so easy to work with and have over 32 years in the industry. Again, that's helin951.com/crane. Are you looking for a powerful immune system hack? Well, our sponsor, Better Way Health, produces one of the highest quality beta-glucans on the market. And beta-glucan is a powerful immune system booster, being called the most effective dietary supplement for a healthy immune system by the American Nutraceutical Association. I personally take beta-glucan from Better Way Health to help keep my immune system strong. And I'm grateful they're offering all of my listeners a special discount code when you order today. Head over to nathancrane.com/beta-glucan for your special offer today. Go get a discount. Try it out for yourself. That's nathancrane.com/beta-glucan. One of my good friends and integrative cancer doctors, Michael Karlfeldt, owns the Karlfeldt Center in Meridian, Idaho. And I'm really grateful that their team has sponsored this episode. Dr. Karlfeldt is a globally renowned naturopathic doctor in integrative oncology, and his center pioneers cutting-edge alternative therapies to combat cancer. They offer cutting-edge therapies, including high-dose IVs, ozone therapy, curcumin, mistletoe, photodynamic therapy, and many others within their 17,000-square-foot advanced medical and wellness treatment facility. With decades of expertise, they offer comprehensive root cause medicine tailored to support your healing journey. You can begin your transformative experience with a complimentary 15-minute discovery call. You can call them at 208-338-8902 or visit their website at thekarlfeldtcenter.com. Again, that's 208-338-8902 or go to the website thekarlfeldtcenter.com.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because what I have found is that when we become really aware of the habit, that is the biggest step you can take to shifting it. I recommend that people play what I call the blame, shame, and complain game. And it's a little game. I learned it in a workshop 20 years ago that I was taking. And we each started with $21 bills. You could do it with quarters or dimes. It doesn't matter. And throughout the workshop, anytime we would find ourselves blaming, shaming, or complaining, we had to put a dollar in this bowl. And I thought to myself at the beginning of this game, oh, this is easy. I got this down. You know, I teach this stuff. Nathan, the very first day, I had gone through 14 of those $1 bills in the bowl. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm sitting there in the room and I'm cold and I'm complaining. Oh my God, this room is so cold. I'm freezing. Well, I've been in a million hotel ballrooms taking workshops or teaching them. I know that. It was my responsibility to bring layers or to go over to somebody and say, hey, can you turn up the temperature here? Right? Rather than sit there and complain about it. So anyway, the first day I went through 14 $1 bills. By the second day, I was down to 7. I had to go back to the front desk of the hotel and get more $1 bills.
Borrow money.
It was a 4-day program. Borrow money. By the third day, I was down to 4. And by the last day, I was down to 1. So I just suggest that people do a game. If you play it with your family or your coworkers, you know, just for a week and note, and then at the end of the week, you donate the money somewhere. So you make it a fun game.
I love that idea. That's something a family could do or a couple can do at home. And it can be, yeah, over the course of a week, it's like, hey, and then let's see, like you make a little friendly competition. Let's see who's got, you know, the most money at the end of, you know, Sunday night. And you turn it into an awareness game. Like that's brilliant, actually. I'm going to do that. I'm actually going to do that with my family.
It's so insidious. The habit is so insidious. And then when you do find yourself doing it, the first thing you do is the first thing you don't do is blame or shame yourself for doing it. Oh my God, there I am again, right. Doing it again. Because then you got to put another dollar. Exactly. It gets you out of the habit of blaming yourself. Instead, what you do is you go, wow, that was cool. I noticed that. So you start to create a habit of celebrating your successes rather than, berating yourself.
And I think a part of that, if you're going to do that game, an important rule that everybody agrees to is, just because you don't say it out loud doesn't mean that it doesn't count, right? So if like honest, 100% self-honesty would be really important, because someone might be good at like not saying it out loud. We know people internalize things a lot. But if you say it internally, then you'd have to be honest with yourself and say, nope, I did it again. Let's put a dollar in, right?
That's a higher level of a game. You might want to start with 50 ones if you're doing it that way. That's a great idea though.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's just, we aren't to blame ourselves for all of this. These are old habits that were established when we were very young. And it's I just say, honor yourself for recognizing it. And that is, recognizing it is taking responsibility for your life.
What do you say to someone that says, let's say they complain about things or blame or shame, or in your case, God, it's so cold in here. Why is it so cold? I need a jacket or something, right? Where you and I would say that's complaining, but if somebody else said, well, it's not complaining, it's just the truth, what would you say?
Right. So, okay, that's a great idea. It's a great question. It is the truth. The energy in which you are holding it is the complaint or not. So it's one thing to go up to someone and say, you know, it's really cold in this room and I'm hoping you can help fix that. That is not a complaint. That is a statement of fact with an action step around how to fix it. And even if you know, wow, it's really cold in here. Do you know who I can speak with to fix that? So it's not blaming anybody. It's making a statement of fact. It's cold in here. It doesn't carry that same energy. Oh my God, it's so cold in here. I wish they'd turn up the heat. Oh, I'm freezing. Totally different energy. And as you well know, everything is energy.
Exactly.
It's all the energy that we're carrying. And so that's where we need to get very honest, is what energy are we carrying with what we're holding and how we're speaking? You know, it's so often people say it's not what you said, it's how you said it. Yeah,
exactly.
It's what energy you're carrying.
And that's so true. And it's, you know, I'm guilty of it from time to time as well. And when I tell people who tell me that same thing, well, it's just the truth. I'm like, yeah, but it's one thing to state the truth. let's say from a neutral perspective, because that's the truth. It's a totally different thing when you put all this heavy negative energy into it, because now you are not only creating that environment for yourself, but for the people around you. It's totally different. Like I say, you know what? It's so freaking cold in here. It's terrible. What's wrong with these people? Like, that energy is not good for you, and it's not good for the people around you. And we know it actually is not good for your immune system. It's not good for your cellular health. It's, you know, it starts to activate a sympathetic nervous system response. You start to get some cortisol releasing. Like, you might even get a little bit of adrenaline going, which is not good when you're doing it so often, when you're so stressed out all the time, versus, man, it's a little cold in here. I wonder if I can find a sweater, or maybe I can find someone to help turn it down, right? It's like, it's a totally different approach, but it makes a world of difference. Those two that little nuance is like super important. So I'm glad you answered.
Thank you for asking that. So, all right. So let me go through all seven areas, and then we'll come back and pick up on one of them, if that's okay. Sure. Two of them or three of them. I know there's a couple I want to pick up on with you, because I think that everyone listening would really, I have some interesting things to share that they may not have heard. So the foundation is taking responsibility for your life and your happiness. Then there are the four corner pillars, and I'll just go through them briefly. The first pillar is the pillar of the mind, our thoughts. You know, do your thoughts drag you down? The second is the pillar of the heart. I have never met a happy person who had a closed heart. So do you have an open heart? Gratitude, loving kindness, generosity, forgiveness. Then there's the pillar of the body, which you spend such a wonderful time, such expertise. Pillar of the body is, do you have the biochemistry of happiness? Do you have the endorphins? Do you have the serotonin? Do you have the oxytocin? Do you have the dopamine, right? And we'll come back and talk more about that as well. And then there's the pillar of the soul. The soul is, how connected do you feel to the greater energy of the universe? And I don't care what you call it, whether you call it God or the divine or creative intelligence or nature or whatever, it's, do you feel that you are part of this greater energetic whole of life? Then there is the roof of your home for happiness, and the roof is your life purpose. Are you living an inspired life? Do you wake up in the morning saying, yes, I am doing what I am here on the planet right now to be doing? And then finally, there is the garden. And the garden is, who are you surrounded by? Are you surrounded by roses and gardenias, those beautiful people that uplift and inspire you? Or are you surrounded by some weeds, you know, some of the bummers of people that drag you down, that might be choking out your happiness? So those are the seven areas. I'm just going to review them. Foundation, taking responsibility for your happiness in your life. Pillar of the mind, pillar of the heart, pillar of the body, pillar of the soul. Your roof is your life purpose, and your garden is your relationships and who you surround yourself with. So I will start by saying that my Achilles heel has always been, and usually your Achilles heel where you're the weakest is going to always be where you are the weakest, where you're going to come back to when you start to slip. So mine was always the body. I did not have the biochemistry of happiness. My mother had low-grade depression. I believe I had low-grade depression. I did not have enough serotonin. And once I really started addressing that, my whole happiness shifted. And that's the one, when I start to feel a little bit, that's the one I go back to first, because I know that's my Achilles heel. So what about you, Nathan?
You know, I want to say that every one of these I have put a tremendous amount of effort into over the last almost two decades now, from literally, you know, thousands and thousands of hours of meditation, of nutrition, of research, of experimentation, of saunas, of ice baths, of, you know, chanting with Hare Krishnas and sweat lodges with Native Americans, and sitting and meditating for hours and hours with Zen master Buddhist monks, and you name it, right? And I will continue all of that till the day I die. And, you know, 20 years, almost 20 years on this path, and I still don't have, I'm still not perfect in any one of these.
I don't know anyone who is.
I've made tremendous progress in every area, like substantial. And it's so funny because I can look back, and this is the interesting time of our current day, is so many videos and so many photos of ourselves, right? I can look back at videos of myself 5 years ago, 7 years ago, 10 years ago, and see such massive transformation in everything about myself, right? My outlook on life and how I communicate and, you know, my own positive mental attitude and all of that. So that is a really interesting time of our current, I think we have a lot of challenges with technology, this whole AI movement and robots and transhumanism. I'm super scared about and think it is a dangerous road we are crossing. And at the same time, you know, technology like this allows us to communicate and share this with people all over the world, and more people are getting online every single day. And so there are obviously a lot of positive benefits to it as well. And we can track our lives, you know, over years and be like, wow, look at the massive progress I've made in 5 years, 7 years. I will say that if you commit to your own personal development, your own health, your own spiritual development every day, you're doing something every day. You're reading, you're meditating, you're exercising, you're learning, you're improving. You're never set like this is the absolute way, the only way forever. But you're like, you know, I've been into plant-based diet and lifestyle for 14 years, and I'm still reading books and learning from carnivore doctors and keto people and all these things. Cause it's like, even though all the evidence and research that I've discovered and have seen in myself in the literally thousands of cancer patients that, you know, we've heard from and talked to, it's like plant-based is the way to go. And yet I'm still open to, you know, what is going on out there? What are other people saying? And cause it's, I'm always trying to learn. So I just wanted to preface that by saying I'm definitely not perfect in any one of these areas, but I think the weakest is probably the one we talked a little bit about, which is the foundation. But it's really weird, right? Taking responsibility for your own life and your happiness, like 100% yes, and I have that really strong foundation, but with basically like one person in my life, you know, find myself blaming, shaming, complaining with nobody else. And it's not their fault. There's definitely not them. Like it's me. Yeah. This is a me thing, right? I 100% accept that, 100% working on it, you know, talking to therapists about it, doing meditations on it, reading books, like everything I can. I don't feel like I 100% have the responsibility, but it still happens. Like it's still so embedded in my subconscious mind that it still comes up, even though I'm working on it constantly. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know. People can, one relationship can be that one trigger, that person, that and they're our gift. That's the gift of that person to help you become whatever, non-reactive, heal whatever that is that needs healing. So, well, good for you that, I mean, you know, it's obvious you take responsibility for your life and your happiness, because look at all the things that you've done and you continue to do. And, you know, just putting yourself in this arena and talking day in and day out to people who are all about living their best life. You can't help. So I think you're A+. You get an A+.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. My teachers in high school would have given me a D- or an F, but you know, I'll accept your A+. Thank you.
Yeah.
So the one I want to talk to you more about, at least right now, is the roof, life purpose. And I was talking with a good friend yesterday, business partner and a good friend of mine. And, you know, this has been something that has changed my life over the years, is really discovering and evolving my life purpose. And I think I'm so blessed, and every day I'm so grateful that I get to do what I love, that I do the work that I love, and that I consciously choose to do that. And when I'm doing something that I don't love, I actually consciously choose to stop doing that. Sometimes it takes me longer than maybe I would like it to, but I eventually stop that thing and go all in on the thing that I love. And I'm making those transformations ongoing over the years, but I think I really started doing that probably you know, 15 years ago, at a really scary time when I had no money and no, you know, no like support and on my own and a new child coming and, you know, like could barely pay the bills. And yet I was opening this spiritual online personal development community for free. No idea how to run a business, no idea how to do anything, but was like, this is what I need to do. This is what my heart's telling me to do. So I'm going to do it. And I've really gone all in on my life purpose ever since. And so for me, it's been a game changer. And I want that for everybody, everybody who's interested, everybody who wants that deep fulfillment in their life, everybody who wants to wake up in the morning and have energy and feel excited about actually going to work or doing the work they love, everybody who is like, you know what? I'm depressed, anxious. I don't like the job I'm at. I feel a sense of purposelessness in my life. I would like to be happier. I would like to have some kind of contribution. I would like to have a sense of fulfillment in my life. I want every single person to be able to, and people close to me as well, to be able to find that deeper purpose for themselves. Because when you do, it is so game-changing and so life-changing. And yet, I'm not an expert. Even though I found it for myself, I'm not an expert in like teaching others how to find it. And so how can people, so asking the expert, yeah, how can people really find their life purpose, their deeper purpose in life?
So there's a couple of answers to this, a couple of ways I want to answer this. And I think that I think we have two types of life purpose, two aspects to our life purpose. I believe the one ultimate life purpose that we are all on the planet for, that we have all incarnated for, is waking up to the truth of who we are. Some people call it awakening or, you know, enlightenment, whatever. I think that, you know, waking up to love, some would say that it's about recognizing the and living in the energy of love, giving and receiving love. That they say that at the end of our lives, people who've had near-death experiences, we have a final exam at the end of our life, and we're asked two questions. The first is, how much did you grow in your capacity to love? And the other is, how much did you learn your life lessons or live your life destiny, your life purpose? And so the love, the growing in who I am, the enlightenment, the awakening is everybody, universal life purpose. Then there's a secondary life purpose, which is, what's my destiny or what's my dharma, the Sanskrit word for life purpose. And I believe that changes throughout a lifetime. So it's not the same. I never in a million years thought that I would write books. Who knew that that was what I was supposed to do? But the point that I'm here for was inspiring people. I saw Zig Ziglar speak when I was 13 years old. I said, that's what I'm supposed to do, is I'm supposed to inspire people. And it takes different forms. And I think that we can't get attached to the form that it takes. And I'll give you a great example of this. My father was a dentist, and he loved being a dentist. He taught me to do what I love. He loved being a dentist. And when he retired at 72, we were all a little worried because we knew about the research on what happens to people when they retire. They lose their sense of meaning or purpose, and they get sick and they die. And not because they're older, but because they don't have that purpose, inspiration. Well, my dad said, that's not going to happen to me. So he analyzed what he loved about being a dentist. And he realized that what he loved about being a dentist was working with his hands in intricate ways and being artistic. Those were the qualities that he loved. He thought that dental work was artwork. I actually go to dentists now and they look at my work in my mouth like, oh my God, who did that? That is so artistic. So anyway, at age 72, my dad took up his second quote profession, needlepoint. He became a master needlepointer. And I remember when he was 85, I went home to visit one day and he was working on his newest needlepoint. It was huge. It was that wide, that high. It was intricate. I said, Dad, how long is this going to take you to complete? And he said, well, honey, I figure at the rate that I'm currently going, it's going to take me 4 years. This was an 85-year-old man starting a 4-year project. Did he finish it? Absolutely, he did. And it hung proudly in their living room until my mother passed away. And it hangs now proudly in my living room. And you looking for a picture?
That's a beautiful story. Yeah, thank you for sharing. So people who are watching this, you can see what needlepoint is if you don't know. I actually, my great grandma taught me to do a needlepoint thing, kind of like this turtle, but it wasn't as intricate. It was more simple. When I was like, probably like 10 years old or something, I did one with her. She was really, really good at it. She did this needlepoint all the time. Anyway, I just wanted to look at it because that just...
Oh, I was trying, I'm trying to find the picture of my dad and his needlepoint.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah. No, but I mean, what a great point. It's, you know, 72 years old and still figuring out, okay, what is it that's going to bring me some sense of fulfillment, some sense of joy, some sense of happiness, not just to bide my time in a mundane mm-hmm. way, but something that I really enjoy. And so I'd say a takeaway there for people who are trying to find a purpose, yes. their purpose. One could definitely be analyze anything you currently do in your life that you really enjoy. Right? Something that brings you joy. Analyze what that is. What is it something that you enjoy doing and why do you enjoy doing it? So ask that question. What do I enjoy doing and why do I enjoy doing it? What is it about it that brings me a sense of joy? Right? Because the more that we have joy in our lives, the happier we are and the more we want to do that thing. And joy is an inner game and it's different to everybody, right? I could do needlepoint now and it would probably bring me zero joy. But for your father,
it would bring me less than zero joy.
Yeah, yeah, I'd be like, nah, exactly. This is too boring.
No, not my right? thing.
For your father, it's like obviously he could spend hours and hours and years doing it and loves it. And so it's bringing him massive joy. So it's different for everybody. But I'd say a big takeaway there is figure out in your life what's bringing you joy. And also, I would always resort back to what Siddhartha Gautama said, which was do whatever you want in life, as long as it doesn't hurt yourself or hurt others, right? Some people get some sick joy out of, and I wouldn't call that joy, you know, let's call that false happiness, yes. right? Of doing exactly. things that are not good for others. But I don't think our audience are any of those people. So things that bring true joy.
And I love that you said this. I have a question that I suggest people ask themselves. And that is, what makes you come alive? What makes your heart sing? And make a list of 10 things that make you come alive. You know, I love inspiring people. I love telling stories. I love, I love being in nature. I love dancing. But in terms of the work that you do, if you're looking for work, what do you love? What are 10 things that make you come alive? There's a beautiful Howard Thurman quote that goes like this. It says, let me see if I can remember it. He says, don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, because what the world needs is people who have come alive. And so ask yourself what makes you come alive and do it now, not a year ago, because it will change. And then there's a second piece to this about living our purpose. And that is called the sacred no. Being able to say the sacred no. Warren Buffett was once asked, why are you so crazy successful? And he said, that's very simple to answer. It's because I say no to 99.999% of opportunities that come my way. And it's so that there's the spaciousness to say yes. And I'll give you an example of this in my own life, because I think it also takes courage. It takes courage and faith to do the sacred no, because the sacred no creates the space for the sacred yes. And so, let's see, 11 years ago, 2013, I was taking a course with one of my dear friends and mentors, Lynn Twist. Lynn Twist wrote a book called The Soul of Money. And I was taking this 9-month program with her. She no longer, I don't think, does that program anymore. But and during it, I made a commitment to not do work that I didn't like. And I had a coach that I was working with. And I I made that commitment with my coach and she was fully supporting me. And wouldn't you know, a week after I made that commitment, out of the blue, I got an offer to from an old client of mine to go speak in China a number of times over the following 2 years. It was a $500,000 offer. It was a great offer. There was just one problem. I hated that kind of travel and teaching in China. It wasn't my thing. It wasn't my vibe. It didn't make me happy. So here I had this bind. I had this $500,000 offer and I just committed to my coach that I wasn't going to do work that I hated. And I ended up turning it down, not having any idea what was going to take the place of that. Well, a couple of days after I said no, I was in my kitchen making lunch with my assistant at the time, Kim. And she came in and she said, "Do you know so-and-so is doing this mentoring program?" And a light bulb went off in my head and I said, "Oh my God, mentoring, that's what I'm supposed to do." And we sat over lunch and I said, "What should I mentor people in?" And then I said, "You know, I am living a miraculous life. Like miracles are happening. People are showing up out of the blue with opportunities. And then like everywhere I turn, it's like life is in the flow. And I think I know how to get there. I could mentor people in living a miraculous life." And I thought, okay, I'll mentor 8 women. And it was this high-end program. And I thought, oh, what if nobody applies? I had 1,100 people apply to this little program for 8 people. And it was the beginning of, I then ended up doing a low-price program for the masses. And it's 11 years later. It's called Your Year of Miracles. I've had 30,000 people through that year-long program of living a miraculous life. And people are having more miracles than I ever imagined they would have. And it all came out of having the courage, knowing first of all, what it is that sings to me and doesn't sing to me. And then having the courage to say no. And I'm going to add to that, having the support system around me of people who believed in me to be able to say no. And then so that I could say yes to the right thing. So that's really, it's really 3 things right there. It's listening to yourself and knowing what makes your heart sing. It's having the courage and the faith to step out. And it's having the support system around you to encourage you to follow your heart, to listen to the soul and honor that.
That's so powerful. And the fact that you were able to say no to something that would have taken a lot of time and energy from your thinking and focus, right? Okay, now I got these presentations I got to prepare for. We've got travel. We've got a couple of years of this. So your mind would have been focused on this thing that, yeah, paid good money. And yeah, it's something you enjoy doing, speaking and teaching. But that particular form wasn't your favorite thing to do. You didn't enjoy it that much, right? So your mind and energy and attention would have been focused on that, and it would not be very fulfilling. Which you saying no allowed the universe, your soul, your mind, emotions to basically, and the opportunity for you to be with that friend and the mentoring to go, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And then I would say, so like that's super important. And then the other takeaway I see there too is when you get that download, when you get that inspiration, when you get that aha moment, you know what, I think that's what I need to do. Oftentimes there's a little bit of fear that comes with that too. And for me, that little bit of fear, the excitement and the fear is a really good sign I'm on the right track. I think the fear, that little bit of fear is probably the biggest inhibitor for most people to actually step into their life purpose, to actually follow their dreams, to actually find deep, true fulfillment and purpose in their life. Because the excitement's there, and the excitement's there to move us forward. Because our soul, God knows what is best for us in our life, and it's pushing, it's pulling us forward. It's like, that's exciting, that's what I should be doing. And then the mind, the logical mind, the subconscious mind, the past behaviors, belief systems, habits go, oh, but what if? What if I'm a failure? What if nobody applies? What if, what if, what if? And then people never step into that next chapter of their life that could be miraculous, just as you talked about.
I so agree with you about this. And I, you know, a dear friend of mine, Lisa Nichols, who actually co-teaches with me in the Year of Miracles, She was in The Secret. She's an amazing, amazing
Lisa's
woman.
Amazing. Lisa's really amazing. Yeah. I've had a few interviews with her over the years. She's incredible. Oh, yeah.
It is incredible. And she says, if you're not a little afraid, you're not dreaming big enough. So it's just what you said. If you're not, you know, that fear is an indicator, and people use it as their excuse to not do it. And the only difference is that people, you don't wait till the time when you don't feel the fear. You go, wow, cool, that's a little scary, and I can do it. And you surround yourself with the people that prove to you you can. And you remember the times in your life when you've done things that were new and scary and that you turned out okay. You remember the times in your life when you did things that were new and scary and didn't turn out okay, but you're still okay. So, you know, it's ultimately, it's having trust in the universe and trust in yourself. You know, Einstein said that the most important question you can ask yourself is this a loving universe? Is this a benevolent universe? And happy people will always answer yes to that. Whether or not their circumstances are the way they think they should be, they feel like the universe is handing them things that are for their best sake. You know, if things don't go right, if you get rejections, there's a phrase that I love, one of my favorite phrases, rejection is God's protection. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, that didn't work out. Rejection is God's protection. That means there's another way. There's something else that's going to work out instead. I can't tell you how many relationships I've had that and when I look back, I go, thank God I'm not with them. You know, rejection was God's protection.
That's awesome. I love it.
It's really about stepping through the fear, leaning into trusting in the universe that life is for you, that if things don't happen, they weren't supposed to, that life is really in your favor.
And to add, I 100% agree. And to add to that is to keep going forward, right? Like sometimes we get rejected. So again, it's like, I see both sides of this because I work with so many people over the years, and my own life, you know, is a testament to all these things. It's like, yeah, I'm excited. I'm going for this thing, you know, get rejected. Okay. That's not for me. And then they give up. It's like, well, no, that was the universe testing you a little bit, right? To see if you really want it. Like, that's how I see it. It's like, I make that commitment. I'm going on a 14-day juice fast. Boom. Literally 3 days in, we get invited to some party, some potluck. And then my wife decides to make the most amazing, delicious, you know, Mexican tamales or something I haven't eaten in like 2 years, like my favorite meal or whatever. And I'm like, never, I haven't had this in 2 years. The only time I'm going to get to eat it is right now, right? The brain, everything freaks out. And then it's like, yeah, but you made a commitment to yourself. You're doing this for 2 weeks for all these reasons, and you're getting tested. You're getting tested. You're getting tested. And we get tested all the time. Like we get support, and then we get tested. It's what I believe anyway. It's what I see. We get support, we get tested. And if we pass that test, it's like you go further, more doors open, and you get another level of support. People show up. Like if you have, and what I teach people all the time, I work with a lot of cancer patients, but I work with a lot of people dealing with all kinds of, you know, health issues, mental, emotional challenges, you name it. And one of the things I teach people is what I call the solution-oriented mindset, which is you have to ask good questions. And if you ask the right questions, you ask good questions, you will get good answers. And if you have that solution-oriented mindset, you go, okay, here's a challenge, here's the barrier, here's the door, but I know this is what I'm supposed to be doing, this feels right in my heart, and then all you have to do is ask the right questions. Okay, so what am I supposed to do? Who can I call? What do I need to learn? What book should I read? God, universe, please show me, my higher self, show me what I need to do. Who do I need to talk to? What do I need to read? What education do I need to get past this challenge? And believe it or not, very quickly and oftentimes almost immediately, someone shows up, something shows up, an ad pops in your freaking Instagram, a book shows up, a phone call, whatever, if you're focused on the solution instead of the problem. Am I right?
That's so right. And, you know, a famous story, but I'll just share it again. I think a lot of people might not have heard it. The Chicken Soup for the Soul series. Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen sent their proposal for Chicken Soup for the Soul, or maybe the whole book, I'm not sure, probably the proposal, to the top 35 New York publishers. This was back in the 90s when there were 35 New York publishers. Now there's probably five. Right. But, you know, and they got rejection letters from all of them. And they did not let that stop them. Most people at that point would have given up. But they said, no, we believe in this. And they actually took manuscripts in their backpacks to the booksellers convention and they handed it out. I think they counted 144 publishers received that manuscript in some form or another. 143 turned them down. One small, almost at the time bankrupt publisher said, okay, we'll take a chance on this. And the rest is history. They sold 500 million copies, literally, around the world. Now, most people would have given up. So it's really about listening inside to the voice of the soul that says this is meant to be, rather than the voice of the ego or the personality, the voice of fear. It's really about who you what are you aligning with? Are you aligning with your ego, fearful, protective personality, or are you aligning with that part of you, that the higher self, the soulful self?
Yeah, it's beautiful. I want to transition and ask you about the garden, who you're surrounded by. And you said, are you surrounded by roses and beautiful gardenias, you know, people who uplift you and inspire you? Or are you surrounded by weeds, you know, people dragging you down, choking out your happiness? I mean, what a powerful metaphor, by the way. And yet this is really complicated because far too often we have somebody or a group of people in our lives that we care deeply about that maybe are bringing us down. And we either don't want to recognize it, we don't fully accept it, maybe we don't fully notice it. And, you know, what do you say? And maybe you love them very much. Maybe they're family, maybe they're friends, maybe they're business partners, whatever. And you kind of see past that for the greater good, right? The greater good of your family, the greater good of the business you run, whatever it is. So what would you suggest to people who are really recognizing, as Napoleon Hill did, you know, long ago, that, you know, we need a mastermind group of people who we look up to, that we talk to, that we connect with, that we learn from, that we share ideas with, who are headed in the same direction that we are. If we do that, if we surround ourselves with people who have similar ambitions or are already successful in what we're trying to achieve in our lives, or already happy or already doing wonderful things, we surround ourselves with more of those people, we will improve ourselves and become more like those people, and vice versa. If we're surrounded by negative people who bring us down, who are toxic, you know, all the time, no matter how conscious and positive and spiritual we are, it's very possible that they're going to bring you down with them.
Yeah. So I think there are three things to do when you're faced with this situation of negative people. This is assuming that you've already decided that they're going to stay in your life. I mean, the obvious thing to do is move on if you can. And obviously if it's family, you're not going to do that. So, so assuming that they're friends or family that you want to keep in your life, there's three things. The first one you've just mentioned, and that is you surround yourself with other people who are aligned with where you want to go, who will carry that energy that of believing in you and of you believing in you. And so that it counteracts the negative people. That's number one. Number two, you build up your own emotional immunity. You know, if you're going to be around people who have a cold, what do to not catch the cold? You build your physical immunity. It's the same way if you've got negative people around you. You build your emotional immune system. You become happier. The happier you become, the more their energy is like just hits up against you and bounces back off. I remember I've gotten to meet with His Holiness the Dalai Lama a few times in small groups. And one time we were in a group, there were maybe 20 people. And he there was this one really negative guy in the group, in the room. And we were thinking, oh my God, how's this going to go over? This guy is so negative. The Dalai Lama walks in and his energy is so contagious. He's just beaming. You cannot help but pick it up. And his energy was so strong that the negative guy completely flipped. I mean, he just totally turned around and you know, the stronger energy wins. So you become so strong that you are the one for whom they are catching the emotions of, they're catching your emotions rather than you catching their emotions.
And that goes back to number one, which is taking responsibility for your life and happiness and not blaming them for how you feel.
That's right. Yep. That's right. There, it's water off a duck's back. It's not going to affect you. It's going to bounce off of you. It's, you recognize that's their stuff and it doesn't trigger you. The only reason anything they do can trigger you is because you already have the trigger inside. They're not doing it. You've got it inside. I actually work with a woman, her name is Polly, P-A-L-I, and she's probably the most awake Westerner I've ever met. She's 85 and she's almost blind from macular degeneration. And she had this wake up, true wake up to who she really is when she was 70. And she can't find any, and since then her health totally turned around and she, people can't push her buttons. Nothing does. She says, I'm open to it. It's just never happened yet. And I've been around her a lot and there's just not a person there that has a reactivity. So recognize if something is hitting up against you, it's our own reactivity. You know, it's our own situation that we get to deal with. Oh, why is that person? Why are my buttons getting pushed here? Those are my buttons. But the third thing I'm going to say, in the meantime, when we aren't in that state that Polly is in the meantime, boundaries. We just create boundaries. You know, if somebody's being really negative around you, you say, you know what? I'm so sorry for what you're going through. I understand. And I can listen for about 5 minutes. And then that's all I can do. If you want to just sit and complain to me, I've got a 3-minute limit or a 5-minute limit, and you train people what will work for you. And if you think, oh, that's terrible, that's selfish, I have a belief that when you do what's right for you, it's right for everyone. When you honestly do what is right for you in your own, truly alignment, it is right for everybody. It might not look that way. You know, saying no to somebody or creating boundary with somebody may go, oh, but that's so mean. Nope, it's exactly what they needed. We can't know what they need. We just only can know what it is we need.
That's so true. I want to go back to the triggers. You mentioned triggers, and a lot of, if not all of, our reactions to the people and situations in our life, negative reactions, they basically come from triggers, right? They come from subconscious programming. They very often come from our childhood. They come from childhood adverse events. They come from, the ACEs in our life. They come from traumas and PTSD. This is really well researched, really well studied. I've done a tremendous amount of research and education on this because it affects our physiology, not just our mental and emotional well-being, which is huge, but it literally affects our physiology and downregulates our immune system, causes chronic inflammation. You know, Dr. Candace Pert did wonderful research on this years ago and showing neuropeptides. I know you know her work, I'm sure. And literally those neuropeptides get stuck.
I knew her. She was a wild one.
Yeah, she was amazing and revolutionary and cutting edge and discovered literally when we go through these traumas, these PTSDs, these traumatic experiences, childhood adverse events, we release neuropeptides. Those neuropeptides get stuck and lodged in tissues and organs, and they are chemoattractants. If we don't have the wherewithal, the forgiveness practices, the emotional healing practices, spiritual practices to release those neuropeptides, and very often when we're young, we don't know, and even as adults, most adults don't know how to deal with emotional trauma. And we store them, they get lodged, they cause chronic inflammation, they're chemoattractants, they literally attract cancer cells to them. And if we don't release them and do the emotional healing, they literally can cause disease in the body. And it's essential we do that emotional healing, but it's one thing to say, yeah, I recognize my triggers, that's why I'm blaming and shaming and complaining. It's a whole other thing to get to the root of that trigger and actually heal it. You have any suggestions there for people?
Yeah. So my experience is that different tools work for different people at different times. And my suggestion is build up your toolbox and you'll know what technology to use at that time. So for me, I have a number of things I go to. One of them is tapping, EFT tapping, another is the work of Byron Katie, the four questions. Another is there's a wonderful work, the six steps to freedom I can't remember the guy's name, Derek, Diedrich something. He's
Six
out of
Steps to
Vancouver.
Freedom. I haven't heard. Oh, Diedrich Wolsock. Diedrich
That's
Wolsock.
it, Diedrich Wolsock. That's him.
I love tapping. I love tapping. I love the work by Byron Katie. Both of those are incredibly powerful emotional healing modalities, by the way. Six
Yeah,
Steps
and
to
you know,
Freedom. I have to check that out. I haven't heard of that
it's
before.
a really wonderful process. And I think that it really is for each individual to figure out what's the thing that I'm going to do in this moment. You know, my husband and I, when we've got triggers with each other, we stop. If it's something that we have that we know was off that we do do-overs all the time. Constantly just catching ourselves and going, yeah, that was an old habit. The way I said that was old. I didn't really let me get more conscious and let me do it again. I mean, something as simple as a do-over and can really change things. And I'm gonna add something else. This is totally a different track, but it is about our relationships. Because I brought up my husband, I want to bring up this little exercise that's the simplest thing, and you think, oh God, I've heard that before. Come on, Marcy. But it works. My husband and I, we've been together 25 years. We were walking on the beach in Hawaii 2 years ago with a couple that are super happy, and they've been together 37 years. And my husband and I have had some chat. We're both very like Italian and a Jew. We got a lot of energy, and we can be. Actually, that's a little technique we do with each other when we get a little nasty. We put our faces up to each other, and pretend we're like dogs and go, and then instantly we break into laughter. But that's just for little disturbances. But anyway, this couple said they've been together 37 years. They were super happy, and they said we do one thing. We've done it for years, and that is we do an appreciation practice every morning and every night. We tell each other something we appreciate about each other or a few things. So Sergio and I committed to doing this for 30 days with each other. And the other thing is you can ask for it anytime during the day as well. And we don't do it every morning and every night. We did for 30 days, but we do it very, very often. And I will say that simple little thing has really shifted the energy of our relationship in a way that's dramatic. And so, you know, the appreciation game is just something I appreciate about you is that you took the puppy out for a walk yesterday when you knew I was busy. And something I appreciate about you is you make me laugh. And something I appreciate about you is that you are such a deep, deep being. You know, it could be anything from what they did to who they are, their essence. And it just shifts the energy of a relationship. I always say, don't take my word for anything. Try it out in your own life and see if it works for you. Use your life as an experiment.
I love that. I mean, it's basically similar to a gratitude practice, right? I have a gratitude practice every day in the
Right.
morning and at night. And, you know, but that's for myself. And I'm grateful for my
Right.
wife and my kids and the roof over our heads and food and, you know, simple things, right? It's the simple things that you can focus on that that can help to stimulate that positive energy within yourself. But saying what you appreciate about each other, we do that in some of our team meetings from time to time. I do it, we do it at dinner sometimes with friends, but it's probably way too far and few in between when I do that, like with family or friends. And so I'm gonna take that one. Thank you very much, and
The
love
habit,
that.
it's the habit. And you know what happened with us is we didn't realize that the other person was appreciated. I didn't realize that Sergio appreciated certain things about me. I didn't think he noticed it. But hearing him say it, I felt seen and validated in ways that I hadn't before. And this is, you know, after a long relationship already. So just the habit of it's beautiful, beautiful. So I'm glad. Report back to me how it goes, Nathan. I want to hear.
I will for sure. I'm getting some good nuggets here, so thank you. And a couple of things before we kind of wrap up here. I
And
got.
there's one I want to share with people if I can.
Yeah, go ahead,
It
please.
falls under the body category. Is it okay?
Yeah, oh yeah, please.
Falls under one that you have so much experience with, and you may even know this practice. But this particular practice for helping raise your serotonin levels has helped me almost more than anything else. And it's so easy. I learned this from a man named Gilles Marin. He is a Chinitsong master. Qinit Song is a form of Qigong, I believe, that relates to the stomach and the digestion. And he told me that the fastest way I can shift my serotonin is to do a sunning meditation. And what the sunning meditation is that you go outside and you do this ideally twice a day and you face the sun. Now, I'll tell you what to do if there's no sun out, but you face the sun with your eyes closed. Super important. Your eyes are closed. And you imagine the sun's rays coming through your closed eyelids and hitting the middle of your head, the pineal gland, and warming up the pineal gland. And you can also imagine it showering down your whole body, but you don't even need to. You just feel the warmth of the sun's rays, or imagine those sun's rays coming in with your closed through your closed eyelids and warming up and lighting up the pineal gland. You do it for about 2 minutes, ideally twice a day, and within 1 week, you will have shifted your serotonin levels, which is your main happiness chemical. It also shifts your melatonin. Melatonin helps you sleep. The better you sleep, the more melatonin you have, the more serotonin you have. So it's this beautiful cycle. And that sunning meditation is just magnificent. Now, if there are clouds, you can still see where the sun would be and imagine the rays coming through, even though there are clouds. If it's raining or you can't go outside, then instead, you just look with open eyes at anything beautiful in nature, flowers or a tree. And that will also help increase your serotonin, not as much as the sunning meditation will, but it will also help you. So again, try it out, see how it works for you. Have you heard that one before, Nathan?
Yeah, I've been doing that for many years, actually. One of my very first early spiritual, I didn't know there was like a whole practice and a whole thing around it. One of my very first early spiritual teachers in San Diego, this is probably like 15, 17 years ago, he actually led me through like a meditation like that. And we face the sun, close our eyes, kind of in a Qigong stance, kind of connecting to the energy of the earth and the heavens. And then just looking at it, we did it both ways, actually, looking towards the sun. And then the other way was turning our backs to the sun and then absorbing, like visualizing, absorbing all that energy in through the backside of the body, which actually feels different and very powerful at the same time. And so, yeah, I try to every day go outside, I get barefoot, sit on a little table, I just get barefoot onto earth, and then sit in the sun, close my eyes, do some deep breathing, do some light meditation. I try and do that every day. And some days I miss it, but every day I do it, I feel so much better. I feel amazing, right? Plus, you're getting the vitamin D, which is an essential hormone for immune system function, for mental and physical well-being, by getting that sunshine. And we actually know by studies worldwide that almost 60% of people are deficient in vitamin D. This is omnivores, vegans, doesn't matter what you eat, because one, you're not getting it from the food, even if if someone's on an omnivore diet. Two, people aren't getting enough sunshine. They're not getting enough sunshine because they're inside all day long with these fake lights behind their computer screens and in offices and in cars and don't get outside. If you get 20 to 30 minutes of sunshine most days, if you're, not too far north or south away from the equator, then you'll generally get more than enough vitamin D that you need. But if you're not getting enough vitamin D, your mental and emotional health and well-being is drastically reduced. And there's a substantial amount of science on that. Not to mention your immune system function is drastically reduced. So, I always encourage people, test your vitamin D levels and see where they're at before you take a supplement. You're probably deficient. A little bit of a supplement is not going to hurt. So take a supplement if you need to, but get outside, get the sunshine as often as you can. And even better, do this sunny meditation you're just talking about, because you feel so much better. I mean, 5 or 10 minutes, you feel amazing sitting out in the sun meditating. It's incredible.
Well, I love what you just taught me about turning my back and having the sun warm the back as well and feeling the rays coming in. I would even think
Visualize it go
through.
like through. So if you feel it coming through the back, like through the center, the whole back, but really the energy focus through the center of the back coming into the heart from behind. And it's this, like, you feel all this radiant energy go right into your heart. And it's really incredible. Like, I'll do it before I have an interview like this. Even if I only have 2 minutes, I'll go boom, outside, barefoot, connect to the ground, you know, get that sun coming through my body. And it's amazing how quick of a difference it makes, actually. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, I'm going to go do that. I can't wait to go do that when we're done.
Marcy, it's been awesome connecting with you again. I think I've done probably 3 or 4 interviews with you over the years. I got to say, this is definitely my favorite one. So thanks for taking the time. And if people
fun to get to sit down with you.
Yeah.
You're amazing. You what I'm so impressed with, I just have to say for you, you have really done the work. You know everything about, you know, I feel like I could bring up anything and you've touched on it. You've dived deep into it, and it really shows, and it shows in your light, in your brightness, and in all that you know. So it's always great to get to talk to you. I'll talk to you anytime, any day of the week.
That's awesome. Well, thank you. I appreciate you so much. I get to learn from people like you and the masters who've come before us. So thanks again. People want to buy your books, Happy for No Reason, Love for No Reason. They want to attend your, I know you've got your online course. We actually share that with our community. It's a year-long Year of Miracles, which is amazing. I know you do a free webinar at the beginning of each year, but if people want to get in touch with you, buy your books, connect, join your community, what's the best website for them to go to?
happyfornoreason.com or youryearofmiracles.com. Both of those are great. They have the information on the happiness is at happyfornoreason.com and Your Year of Miracles for youryearofmiracles.com.
You rock, Marcy. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you. You rock, dude. Lots of love to everyone.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Nathan Crane Podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and share this on social media. Then head over to nathancrane.com for your free ebook.
So when we're talking about, you know, what are these underlying causes and conditions of these chronic diseases, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, they all have very similar, if not identical, causes. And that's the thing, is when we get to the root cause of these diseases, we can not only prevent these diseases from ever happening, but empower our bodies to heal from them.
In every one of our cells, we have tens and hundreds of thousands of chemical reactions that are happening every second that are cycling back and forth. And it's like sort of a yin and yang.
And, you know, for me, the soul's purpose is evolution. It doesn't care about comfort. It cares about evolution. Mm. And so I think so long as we are following our soul, then we will evolve. And I think what sometimes blocks us from living our purpose, from manifesting that next level of our expression, is we have not evolved.
There is also a time for letting go all the expectations and relax and just breathe and be grateful for what you have achieved.